Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. Sean Penrod here. So happy that you are joining the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. We have an excellent guest in line for today, but before we dive into that, we are here at the beginning of December, so the announcement for the winner of the November patron exclusive giveaway will be coming soon, probably next episode or the one after that. I'll be announcing who won the giveaway for November. So, as a quick recap for those of you who may be joining us for the first time, each and every month I do a giveaway for the patrons of the show. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to check that out. Basically, it's a great way for you to connect with the show and support it directly, and if you do, I say thank you by doing a giveaway each and every month. It may not seem like a lot, $1 or $2 per episode per month, but it really adds up on my end. It really helps me do things like get the editing and the show notes done and gives me the resources I need to do the fun giveaways each and every month. So thank you to each and every patron out there. I really appreciate your support, and I look forward to many more episodes of MTG Pro Tutor with you. Spoiler season has started. There are a few cards here and there that are coming out, and we have a fantastic Facebook group where we are posting those and talking about those, as well as talking about our tournament results, submitting deck lists and getting inputs from others, asking rules questions. It's just a fantastic, uplifting community. So make sure you join the MTG Pro Tutor Facebook group. You can just look us up on Facebook or go to mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group, and you'll get redirected right there. The only rule really is that you are kind to everybody there so that everybody knows that no question is too dumb. And you all have done a fantastic job of keeping the community upbeat, positive, and helpful for everybody there. So thank you so much to everybody who is involved with the community so far. We had a Grand Prix over the weekend, Grand Prix Denver, and I want to give a huge congratulations to Matt Severa, past guest of the show, who took it down and has another Grand Prix championship under his belt. So congratulations, Matt. That's awesome. We love seeing past guests go off and do great things. There are also some really good players in that top eight, some new faces that I'm excited to reach out to and invite on the show. So look for those names coming here in the future. These past couple weeks, I have had a blast interviewing people from all over the world, and we're getting into those interviews now. So the next couple weeks, there'll be people from the World Magic Cup. So players from all over the world represented their countries at the World Magic Cup, and I reached out to all the players that I could find in the top eight teams and had them on the show. So today is the first of many of those episodes, and without further ado, let's dive in with our guest and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest made it to his first Pro Tour, Pro Tour Madrid, in early 2016, where he made day two. He's been playing on and off since 2000 and has won states and regionals, as well as other low-level tournaments. He's a member of the 2016 Australian World Magic Cup team who loves building new decks and tweaking current ones. Coming to us from Melbourne, Australia, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Ryan Cubitt. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good, Sean. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Ryan, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Egyptian Cubitt, but he's not really super active on Twitter, so the best place to probably reach him is on Facebook. So reach out to him, ask him questions. He obviously knows a lot about Magic, and we're going to dive into that right now. Hey, Ryan, so we'd love to learn a little bit about you before we dive into the Magic thing. So you're out there, obviously born and raised in Australia. Are you from Melbourne originally, or have you moved around a bit?
I'm actually originally from Tasmania. One of the island off the bottom of Australia, and I only moved to Melbourne about 5.5 years ago.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, we're pretty familiar with that because, you know, we know that there's a bunch of cartoon devils that run around there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's it.
Excellent. So you're from Tasmania, relocated to Melbourne. So you have a big family, siblings?
I have one sister, and she also lives in Melbourne, but all my other family lives in Tassie. They're all like parents, okay. Cousins, everyone. They're all down there still.
All right. So what made you relocate?
It was just a bit stuck in my job in Tassie because I actually do work in IT. And I had a few mates at the time also working in IT, and they were all moving up to Melbourne. And I was like, no, I'll put it off. And my sister had moved up a couple months ago, and then like basically they'd all locked in, got their accommodation, everything. And then like last minute, I was like, you know what? I'm going to move up too. So I moved up without any like jobs waiting for me or any accommodation or housing or renting hooked up. But I managed to get it all done in a month's time. Had a job at government and found a place to rent after staying on mate's sofas for a couple of weeks.
That's really neat. So, you know, living life on the edge, moving up to a new place, getting it all sorted in, you know, a month's time. So that's awesome. That's really cool that you got that figured out. That's neat.
Yeah, it was pretty good to get it all sorted so quickly.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, that's really neat. So, and like you said, you crash on some mates' couches and have your sister up there. So that's nice. And a good, you know, government job. So you should be good to go. That's neat. So we love learning about, you know, a little bit about where you're from and what you do outside of magic. So you do IT and that's neat. And we love using stories to bridge the gap between where we are and where you are, because you're out there doing what we want to do. You know, you've been to the Pro Tour, you're playing on the Australian team for the World Magic Cups. That's really cool. And we want to learn how you do that and, you know, what you study and how you prepare and whatnot. So the first thing we want to learn, though, is your origin story. We want to go back in time and have you take us to the very first time that you ever saw or played with magic cards. Can you tell us that story? What was that like? Where were you?
Yeah, so it was around when I was in about grade 10, and it was one of my good mates at the time, Robert. I was just at his place, you know, playing video games as you do around that age when you're around 16. And I don't know, I just went over to his shelf to grab, I don't know, like another game or, you know, DVD or VHS, whatever it was back then. And there was a pile of magic cards just sitting there. I didn't know what they were at the time. I was like, oh, what's this? And he's just like, oh, it's a card game. I can teach you how to play. And yeah, basically he showed me the very basics. So his understanding of the game was also very low. So there was like heaps of rules we didn't know about. And yeah, we started playing each other and we were quite intrigued. And then we found out there was like pre-releases after we bought a couple of like booster packs from a store. And yeah, from there it developed and I couldn't stop playing and started playing more competitive tournaments.
Man, and that's so cool. Hanging out there on a shelf, you went over to go get something completely unrelated and boom, you found him and started playing.
Yeah. And anyway, he wasn't even playing them. He was just like, you know, he'd bought them like 2 years ago or something.
Wow. What was your first set? When did you come in?
So I came in, when I went into the store to buy packs, I could still buy like Mercedes masks, Urza block. But I think the first set came out while I was playing. It was probably like Nemesis. So that was like one of my first pre-releases, was Nemesis. But yeah, in the shops, you could basically still buy all the old packs.
So what's been your favorite set, you know, since you dove into Magic?
I really like Threshold when that mechanic came out and like Invasion. Back then, that was like, I was very addicted to Invasion because I liked making like five-color decks. Had lots of like multicolored cards back then. Obviously, a lot of the newer sets now just have like some really cool mechanics what they created from like way back then. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have like a favorite set.
But Invasion stands out to you because you like the Threshold?
Yeah, it was just like, and I liked the artwork and everything from back then. It's just something from back then what I quite liked and played a lot of. I think it's probably also to do with I'd only been playing for like a year or so. And that set just stands out a lot. I think that's probably when I changed for like, I knew how to play the game a bit more.
Yeah, that's cool. That makes sense. Along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards? Because I know it's hard to pick one. So what stands out to you today?
I would have to say probably like Goblin Guide. I used to be known as like a red mage for like a very long time. And I was also one of those people who used to like Stone Rain a lot.
Awesome. Hey, so for those of us who don't know, what is Goblin Guide? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Yeah, so Goblin Guide, it just seems, you know, pretty simple. It's just like a straight up one mana 2/2 creature in red, but it also has haste. And when it attacks, it reveals the opponent's top card of their library, and if it's a land, they get to draw it. And that was considered a downside as its ability, because it's like giving your opponent potentially a free card. So that was the downside they put on the red card, which in real life was not a downside because then you knew gave you like little edges, like if they were stuck on land, you like knew they weren't drawing another land. And the fact that it's sheer power of just being a 2/2 haster for one red mana was enough that it was not
so nuts. So nuts. Yeah, he's such a good card. My I have a really good friend who's a red mage, and he plays Burn in Modern, and he was the one that introduced me to Goblin Guide, really, because obviously he plays four of them. So yeah, such a good card. Such a good card.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I played with that for the full 2 years in Standard.
Do you still use it, or do you play red in Modern?
I did on the weekend. I'm not so much.
So let's see. You came in, back in Mercadian Mass was kind of the, your first real intro to the game. And like you said, it started getting a little bit more competitive and obviously going off and doing, great things now. Why have you played Magic all these years? What's kept you around? What makes Magic fun for you, Ryan?
I do stop. Like, you have times when you like say, don't play for a year, but I don't know. It always draws me back. I think for me personally, it brings back great memories of, my mate who like taught me how to play, and he's no longer with us anymore because he died of cancer many years ago, actually, now like over 10 years ago. But I think it's a little bit to do with like it reminds me of him, and a little bit of too of just how much fun the game is. Like I've met a lot of like good people through the game, and I don't know, just can't stop. Never really stop playing this game once you get into it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's really neat. Like, for you, it's the memories, it's the chance to connect with other people. And like you said, the, remembering others. And so I love how, even though it's a game, for many people, when I ask this question, they say it's the connection, the friends, the people that keeps them around. And I love that the game is just a vehicle to really help us, connect and form relationships with other people that extend beyond just the game itself. So that's really neat, I think.
Yeah, no, it's really good. They're good, the connections you get over, get like life friends just through this game.
So as you started getting more involved in Magic, when you started getting a little bit more competitive, what was an aspect of Magic early on that you struggled with? Something that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame?
I had a couple little things within my like first couple of years. First, I really liked playing with 80 cards. I don't know what it was. An 80 card deck was where I was at. I'm pretty sure that was like my first year. And I didn't understand like the concept between having like less cards to draw, like obviously your good cards better. So I was like, but there's so many good cards. What I like, why can't I just have all of them in there? I remember that being a thing from like my first year or so. And then when I sharpened up a bit, I realized exactly what I was talking about. Another big thing was damage on the stack. That took a little while to get used to when, like, you could block. But people who don't know anymore because it no longer exists.
Right.
Being able to, block a creature against a creature and then put the combat damage on the stack. And then if the creature had, like, a sack ability, you could then sacrifice it after it's dealt its damage to a creature, which made no sense at all, obviously. Because it's like the creature's now dead because you've sacrificed it to do, like, some ability. Like, Mog Fanatic is the card from back then, what used to be really good, which now is not so good. It's basically a 1/1. You can block and then sack, and it does one damage to target creature or player. So back in the day, you could trade up with it, kill something with two toughness, but now, can't do any of that.
Yeah, thankfully that's gone.
But I think other things were just learning just basic resource management, I think it's a big deal. When you start to learn that you don't have to like save every life point or like using your life total as a resource is something you have to come to terms with. And then I think the next step is like working out which decks are like good. I remember like net decking wasn't really huge back in the day. This is like around, early 2000s. So there was, in a tournament of say 30 people, there'd probably only be maybe 10 people with a net deck, something like that. Well, now it'd be like 30.
Everybody, of the 30. Yeah. Yeah, I like how you explain the concept of, you had your 80 card deck, and because I think we've all been there at one point, like, oh, there's just so many good cards, and then it takes a while to understand, hey, if you cut it down to the 60, then you're just going to draw the best cards, more often. And so I think that's always fun to hear the progression that players that we look up to go through, kind of going through those early stages and resource management. I remember when I learned, hey, you know, your life is just a resource. I used to block everything because my life's important where it is important, but really the only point of life that matters is the last one.
Yeah.
And yeah, you have to be careful against what you're playing. You know, if you're playing against burn, you don't want to hover at, you know, two or three life because they're just going to lightning bolt you. But at the same time, if you win a game with 4 life or 12 life or 18 life, you still won, you know? And so I really like that, you know, when you learn, oh, hey, I can take a couple early hits. I don't have to chump block. I can wait till I get a bigger blocker, things like that. And so, yeah, definitely resource management, especially using your life as a total, I think is a really cool lesson to pass on because it takes some getting used to, and you definitely want to remember that as you're, you know, moving forward and playing and building your strategy. So that's really neat. Was there a period of time, Ryan, that you felt that you improved the most as a player? Kind of a time that you saw the Matrix or, you know, leveled up as a Magic player?
Yeah, there was definitely a time in Tezzy where I saw that I was getting better because suddenly I went from, I remember I was like quite young and I started like top 8ing tournaments. And I'd only been playing for like just over a year. And I remember one of the older guys at the time was like, oh, we're going to have to watch out for you. I didn't quite know what he meant, but I guess at the time it was more the fact that I just suddenly, you know, started doing well in tournaments. And, you know, you got those set players, you just assume they top 8 every week, day out, day in. And all of a sudden there's like someone new who's just been playing the game for not very long and he's taking a top 8 away from someone who normally gets it. And then it just went on from there. And then I remember getting asked from those guys if I wanted to like go play cards, you know, casually with them. And they were like the better players in, say, Hobart in Tasmania. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. And I, like, at the time, I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, sweet, get to go play Magic cards at some new guys' place. That should be fun. But, you know, obviously looking back now, what it really meant was they saw that I was, like, all right at the game and just invited me back because, you know, they're nice people. And, yeah, from that, playing against better people suddenly improved my skill. And then there was a bit where I, like, kind of reigned over Hobart where I was just winning every tournament. For like a year straight. Didn't matter what it was, like Friday Night Magic, pre-release, like a GPT, like whatever tournaments they had back then. We didn't have PTQs because we didn't have enough players. But yeah, it was just like I won all these things, and it was like that's when I knew I'd like taken it to the next level. Because all of a sudden.
That's really cool. You start getting noticed by, you know, the good players, you know, that's really cool. So what got you to that point? Like, how did you, especially early on, like, how did you get up to the point where you were top 8ing?
I think it was me and my mate were like very competitive and we just played heaps. Like, it's like anything. You just, the more you play, the better you get. And it was more than that. We had to be like better than each other because we like went to the same school. We both played hockey, which is field hockey in Australia. So we both play on the same team. We're both like high forward strikers. So we're all about getting goals. And then it's like, so we're already playing hockey together, doing school together. Now we've added in Magic plus video games already. And Magic just started taking the time away from all of those things. And then we had to be better than each other. Yeah, that drive pushed me most.
Yeah, that's awesome. You build a deck that beats him, and then he builds one that beats you, and you just keep pushing and looking for the edges, and then that carries over to when you go play against other people.
Yeah, and I think it all came together around 2004 when I won state champion, and my mate came like fourth, I think. He was top of Swiss. I remember because I won, but I also remember it because in the morning... My girlfriend at the time broke up with me. So I was like literally right before the tournament started. So I entered into this tournament and I was not feeling crash hard as emotions are when you're only like 2004, I would have been like 20. Yeah, maybe 19, 20. So I entered into it. I remember just I was playing Clarkheim Ironworks in Standard. That was back in Mirrodin Block. Is it Mirrodin? Yeah, Mirrodin Block. And I remember I had the win, but you basically, in that deck, you just sack all your artifacts, build up all this mana, and then you either like fireball your opponent for like 20, or you remove all the artifact lands from your deck and then create like 1,000 1/1 mirrors with mirror incubator. It's basically how that deck worked. I remember I did the combo and then didn't float any red mana and then went to fireballing. My opponent's like, well, how are you paying the red? So I had all this mana, but no way to make a red mana. I was just like, what am I doing? So I just like lose round one. And then I remember going to the bathroom and just talking to myself, being like, come on, focus, focus. And then I threw game one of round two and then managed to like just win the next two games. And I told myself, I'm like, that's it. Clicking on now. And then I didn't lose a game from then and just won the whole tournament.
Wow. Wow. Oh man, that's crazy. That's crazy. Man, so that kind of goes into the next point, which is, you know, our journey through Magic. And everyone has a journey through Magic that includes highs and includes lows and proud moments and sad moments. But those specific highs and lows are unique to each player. And so maybe this is it or not, but I'd like to dive into, first of all, your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience. So take us to that event, that time, that moment, that period, whatever it was for you that you consider your worst Magic moment, and share with us what happened, what the events surrounding that, and then what you learned from it.
One of my worst moments, starting to think, I was obviously like, I just couldn't kind of lose really. Like I'd always be really good. And I remember just playing, this is not very long after I've just won this state tournament. I played like a Friday Night Magic, and throughout my like whole Magic career until then, I'd never come, say, last in a tournament or not round a round. I remember playing the Friday Night Magic tournament and I went like 0-3 and I run back the same deck, the same KCI deck. So I lost all my rounds and then got a bye on the last round.
Yeah.
Come last. But I remember thinking, oh, wow, it really does make a difference, because like every single opponent had like artifact hate. And I was just, it was like just like not one round basically in a whole tournament, and thinking, because I thought too much of myself kind of thing. It's like your high is like you've just won something you've been wanting to win. So like that States tournament, the year before I came second against, and the person I played in the final was the same person I played in the final the next year.
No way.
Yeah. So he was like the person who was the best player in Tassie. So it was like him was like passing the torch to me, and then I obviously passed it on and so forth and so forth off in Tassie. But yeah, I remember thinking like I finally done it, so it's like I'm finally now the one reigning supreme. And then I go to this Friday Night Magic and then just like lose everything, and it was just because, you know, being too cocky because you're young. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be really tough. Like you said, you just won States, and then at a Friday Night Magic, which is just kind of this like, they're fun and you still go and whatnot, but it's not like this super big event. You just get crushed and you're like, what happened? And like you said, you notice everyone was packing artifact hate and it really made a difference, you know? And then also you mentioned the cockiness, which is kind of what I want to dive into. What did you do to move past this? So you kind of had this, you know, wake up call, like, hey, you know, you might've won States, but well, you're still not king of the world. What did you do to move past that? What helped you learn and grow and develop as a person and as a player?
I think I just like adapted more. I learned early on that Magic, you know, it's just a game. So like you win some, you lose some every time, and you just don't want to focus on, say, like all your losses you have, or even all your wins, because as everyone knows, as good as your deck is or as good as a player you are, you can still just not draw lands or not draw the particular card you need at the right time. So you're going to lose, and you're going to lose a lot throughout the game. And I think it was more the fact that in Tassie, I guess the density of like the better players is like lower than, say, a bigger city like, say, Melbourne. So you probably, once you reach like a certain level, you probably just end up winning a lot, even though you're running like, you know, maybe a bad deck or bad choices. And then it's like the other aspects that, you know, you have to learn. If you've just won a tournament with a particular deck, people then are going to have most likely sideboard cards to beat that. I even got to like points. I remember there's like a player, Nick, who basically was the person who overtook me in Tassie. He used to just sideboard cards purposely just for my deck. Because he'd be like, well, to win the tournament, I will have to play you at some point. So I may as well sideboard in a way so that I have something just which like goes well against your deck, because it will have to happen. So he took it to like the next level. So it was those type of things. You just have to learn that if you're winning a lot, then people will, if they know what you're playing and realize that they're going to have to play you to win, they'll change their whole game plan around that.
They'll be gunning for you. So on the flip side are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So share with us your proudest Magic moment to date.
Okay. I mean, I do have some pretty good ones, what's happened in the last year. But ones, I've got a couple. Obviously, winning the States was a huge, huge one for me back in 04. Another one was I was traveling around Europe. Traveling around with a friend, and I convinced him to let me play in an Austrian pre-release. And it's, when was this? Around 07? Maybe? Oh no, around like, yeah, 06. And I played in this pre-release. All the cards were in German. I couldn't read them. But it was, I'm trying to think what set it was. It was one of the sets of the Dragon Cycle, Multicolor Dragon Cycle. I think Call of the Herd was in the set. Is it like Fate Reforged, maybe?
That wasn't back in 2007.
I can't quite remember the set. Anyway, I played the pre-release, and I won the pre-release.
How did you get past not knowing what the cards were?
So what I did, it was an expansion set. So I already knew what the main cards were based on their picture from the first set. So then I just went on to like, MTG Salvation at the time and just memorized the card pictures, basically. And the local judge could speak English. And he said he would translate any if I'd like forget or like just didn't know. So that was really good. So I played the tournament and I was like constantly asking on a couple of things. But there was like a moment because the guy was like, oh, this player, Caleb, I don't remember his last name, but he's like a world champion, has a world champion deck based after him. Like he's a very good Magic player. It's like, oh, he's coming. He'll be playing in this pre-release. And fair enough, he did come. And I played him in the second last round, managed to beat him. It was just like, this is the best thing ever. And then I've won. And then I won the whole pre-release. And the judge like announced the winner. And the winner is Australia. That was a big moment for me. So I won like a box, which I like instantly sold and got like, I don't know, like €80 or something back in the time, which was great for when you're backpacking around Europe.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a big moment for me. I enjoyed that.
I love that. That's so cool. I wonder what all those Austrians were feeling. This guy can't even read the cards. he's winning our tournament. That is so cool. And that's neat. You know, you got a whole box of German cards and you're like, well, I'm backpacking. So here, I'll just sell this.
So that was really good. And then fast forward to this year, obviously I qualified for my first RPTQ. Must have been this year? Or end of last year? No, must have been like January. Then I'm not too sure when the RPTQ was, if it was January or end of last year for Madrid, April. Anyway, I qualified and yeah, I lost the first round and then won all the rounds and top forward. So finally was super pumped because it's like the first pro tour I've ever qualified for. I've played a lot of PTQs back in my day and got a lot of top fours and top twos. And when I told one of my mates in Tassie, he's like, it's like it's designed for you, Ryan, because you're like the master of top fouring a PTQ. Just like Tassie did get PTQs for a little bit. Got them for like maybe on and off for about 2.5 years total. And it was literally the only tournament I couldn't win in Tasmania. I'd always come top four and that'd be it.
And now that they shifted it, you can, the top four is good.
Yeah. So the first one I did, I qualified and I was like, oh, because I was starting to think maybe it wasn't going to happen for me. Like, you know, everyone wants to get on the pro tour. They are hoping just to tick that off as a life goal from playing the card game. And yeah, I mean, I'm in my, early 30s. So I was thinking, you know, it's probably a bit past me now. I now live with my missus and work all the time. And somehow I've spent enough time still playing cards to finally get there.
Man, that's so cool. That is so cool. So how many Pro Tours are you qualified for now?
Just the one in Dublin. So I played the one in Madrid and then I day two'd that one. So that was my main goal. So my main goal, I didn't set it too high, obviously, for my first pro tour. I was just like, just want to day two and that'd be enough. Anything after that is great. So I day two'd it. So I was pretty happy. And then, yeah, I didn't play because I don't play as much during the hockey season. Because it kind of PPTQs and stuff kind of clash with hockey games, both being on the weekend. So I was still playing them, but I just wasn't playing as many. And then, yeah, and then the WCQ season came up and I was like, right, guess I'll give this a go. And this all came about because on the Madrid trip, a mate of mine, so the RPTQ for that one was in Brisbane and I've got a friend, David Mines, who's also on the Australian team, lives in Brisbane. I was like, oh, you know, can I stay out there with you? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I sat up there, qualified that way. And he was just like, well, I guess I'll just have to, you know, get there via the GP. And I was like, yeah, you're just going to have to top eight the GP and come to Madrid with me. And he managed to win GP Melbourne. So that his first GP win. So he came to the pro tour there and that restarted him again. So he'd been on the pro tour before, but it was quite a few years ago as well. He thought maybe Magic had, you know, passed him as well. So he got his start again there and then has played every pro tour since that one all the way through and became the captain and qualified for Worlds. And I was like, well, if you're the captain, I guess I'll play these WMCQs. So I flew up to the one in Brisbane, was where our first WMCQ was, and just missed out on top eight because I lost like two rounds. So I was like, right, okay. We'll see how the Melbourne one goes. So I sleeved up my unusual deck choice of Restore Balance and lost the first round and then managed to win the next 10 rounds straight.
Ooh, nice.
To be on the team. So I was like, well, mindsy, it looks like it's two European trips. And then, as we all know now, we went to the World Magic Cup. And I was like, well, we're just going to have to top eight so we can come to Dublin with you, make it like three European trips. And so, yeah, we somehow managed to do that. We're not too sure on how we did that.
That's awesome. That is so cool. That is so cool. Congrats, man. Like, that's so neat to hear your progression and how you did that. And actually, David Mines, we're going to have him on the show here shortly as well. So I'm really excited to dive into him. And that's cool to hear that you guys are mates and, you know, have really done well together, moving, you know, kind of a resurgence of older, not really old, you know, but like a resurgence of Australian Magic players. That's cool that both of you guys are kind of, you know, getting back on the pro tour and doing great stuff.
Yeah. It's really funny. It's like both happening at the same time. We've only known each other for probably about 2 years or so, but it was like, we had so many common interests that I don't know. We just developed as friends real fast. And then now we've done all these European trips together as well on top of it.
So let's go into when you were preparing for, let's say, you know, these WMCQs, because most recently, as of right now, most recently, you just done had a really great run at the World Magic Cup. So to get to that point, what did you have to do? So you were the WMCQs, what format were they?
Yeah, so the WMCQ was modern.
Modern. Okay. So what did your preparation look like? How far out did you start preparing? How did you choose your deck? How much were you playing? Like, what did that look like for you to be able to go to a WMCQ and do well enough that you made it onto your team?
Yeah. So I think the big thing what's lifted my game over the last year and a bit has been the leagues on Magic Online. I used to, mostly with Magic Online, I used to, you know, just do drafts, which I think most people who use Magic Online don't want to really, when they first start, don't really want to invest in a standard deck online. Cause it's like they don't want to buy the same deck twice, like once in real life and then once online. So they just normally do limited only online. That way you can kind of just keep looping it in the draft section. And when the leagues got put in, I really liked those because it meant I could play at any time. So, you know, you don't have to sit there for like 5 hours straight, be locked in after you've worked all day, or say I've got like hockey training or something else on during the day. I don't have to, you know, actually book time to just play like a daily or something. So I think I hardly ever used to do those. So now all of a sudden being able to play leagues, which not only does it let you play, you know, the five rounds fire way faster because it just repairs you straight away. So I think I just started playing the competitive leagues for standard and then moved over into modern. And I think that really helped my game for both getting onto, say, the Pro Tour and for the modern bit. I own both my decks online, so it helped a lot with those. Let me play a lot more games in the free time I had. And I think just playing, you have to play in real life as well, but yeah, I think that just, you know, helped the foundations a lot more, get a lot sharper.
So the leagues were a really big part of your preparation. Awesome. Yeah, that's really neat. I love how they have that system set up, like you said. You don't have to block off 5 hours. You can just play. You can play when you can, and you still get your magic in. So I think that's great.
Yeah, because like the biggest thing about, I think, you know, the older you get, when it's like you work all day, and so you get home, you fire like say one of the old things, like a daily or something. So you're locked in for like hours, because then you have to wait for you know, the round to finish, like a normal tournament, and you know you get tired. So it's like, you know, 9, 10 o'clock. So now you're probably not playing at your peak magic skill and you still have to wait for like another 3 more rounds before you can like finish for the night.
As opposed to just coming home and popping off one game, be like, okay, that was fun. Yeah. You know, you get your magic fix and you kind of unwind. And then the next day you do 1 or 2 games. And then on the weekend you get to do the last 2 or whatever. And then you just did your league.
Yeah. Or you just, you know, you play the 2 rounds or something. And then you notice you start playing the 3rd round. And all of a sudden you see that you're doing like play mistakes because you're tired stuff, and you can just stop it there. So like end of that round. Yep. That's it.
Yep. Pull the plug.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was a big help for me with those leagues. And then the next thing, I guess, is like, as always, deck selection. I always play with kind of, you know, things I'm comfortable with. For modern, my Restore Balance choice is fairly unusual, but I've been playing it for probably about 2 years. So most people, when they think of, well, people don't know what Restore Balance is. Basically, it's balance, but it's a suspend version. So as the mechanic, when, you know, it gets suspended, you move a time counter at the start of each of your turn. Then once all the time counters are gone, you know, you play the spell for free. Basically, it's just a delayed casting. So, you know, comes down a few turns later and then its effect or whatever it does hits the board. So in Balance's case, Restore Balance, it's balance. So it equals hand size, creatures and lands to the person who has the fewest. So basically your goal is to have, like, say, Greater Gargon suspended, and then you just, you know, just stack all your lands, all your creatures, and basically they're left with nothing, and hopefully, you know, you've suspended everything out of your hand. So you've got, like, minimal cards, so they end up, the goal was basically to make them have no hand, no lands, and no creatures. And then you've got all these suspend creatures coming in turn after turn, and then they just can't ever catch back up.
That sounds amazing, actually. That sounds really cool.
But, yeah, most people, when they think of the versions these days, all run, like, border posts. And the version I run no border posts. So mine is just purely on the advantage of restore balance and suspend creatures. And I use restore balance more as like a way to get ahead. So often I'll cast like a couple during a game just to like get, you know, 3-for-1s, 4-for-1s. And that's a game my advantage there and then win that way. And then the alternative way to win is it has the Nahiri Emrakul Planeswalker combo of just ticking up Nahiri and killing them with Emrakul.
Brutal. So you've been playing that deck for a couple of years. So that's just what you play in Modern. So there really wasn't much, oh, what deck should... You weren't really like kind of gunning... You weren't gaming the meta. You just like, this is my deck.
I wasn't gaming the meta. It was just something I'd been playing. Modern wasn't a particularly like format I really enjoyed too much. I mean, I enjoyed playing Restore Balance, but I didn't have like super high hopes on like winning the whole tournament with it. You know, obviously I hoped that that could happen, but I knew my deck choice. My deck is also very hard to play because you have to think about so many different things compared to like a lot of other decks. But I know it worked out well. Yeah, and
obviously, that's awesome.
There's a lot of people reading cards every round because they didn't know what certain cards did and just random, you know, common and uncommon suspend creatures, which they don't really understand, or the fact that they have haste and they come in off suspend and all these little things kind of got a lot of players.
That's always a good position to be in because if your opponent isn't familiar with your deck, they don't know what to counter or what's important, you know, and it's kind of tricky because they're like, you know, and so they don't, or even if they look at your hand, they're like, I don't know what to take, you know? And so when you're running some run of the mill, everybody knows Modern, they're like, okay, well that's my target for this and I have to block this and that guy I can let by. And
yeah, if you're playing like against Infect for the millionth time or something, you kind of like know what to expect. So yeah, it had a lot of that. Plus as the tournament rolled on, I don't know, my draws and hand got a lot better. We could say there was the deck runs a one-off Gemstone Caverns, which is the one that gives you the luck counter. So basically you get to play a land. If you're on the draw, you get to play this land for free before the game starts. So you start the game with a land in your hand. And it has the added bonus of making you discard a card, which is great. Because the best thing about a Restore Balance deck is Mulligan is awesome. Because basically you cast one Restore Balance and it just equals everything up. But it's even better for you because you've mulliganed down to a better hand, hopefully. And it's just like restored all that for them and made them discard everything.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, hello. You've excited me. This sounds like a really cool deck. That's awesome.
But yeah, I knew things were going well when I drew my one-off Gemstone Caverns probably about 5 times on the draw in the last like 6 rounds. And in one of the rounds, they drew both games. So he started on the play because he won like the... He was in the top 8. I think the first round of the top 8. He was the Infect player. And he finished higher on the standing. So he started on the play. And I had that in game 1. So I won. Oh, I managed to win with that. And then in game 2, I mulled to 5. And had that again. And Greater Gargon. And a Cascade spell. And another Suspend creature. And the lands. So things were going well as well.
That's great, man. That's so cool. I love that. Absolutely love that. Now, to get where you are, you have played thousands of games against a wide variety of opponents, and you've seen so much, you've learned so much. What would you say is the biggest mistake that you see other players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
Biggest mistake? I would say I do see players, like in their own head, I think is a big thing. A lot of players, you know, they have that term tilting when like something doesn't go their way and then they can't like go on with the match. And then not only that, then their next matches, they don't play those ones either that well anymore. And it's like a spiral effect. So it like just brings them down over the course of the, I don't know, course of the tournament. They end up with a poor finish. I think my biggest thing, which might be helping me now, is I obviously care a lot about Magic and like obviously doing well is great and all, but I think in common sense, I just don't care as much as what I used to when say I was like 20, you know, when it's like you live and die by the sword kind of thing. I think now I'm in a point in my time when it's like, it's awesome that I'm doing well, but it's, I don't know, like I was at a point where like I would keep playing just out of like, I like playing, but I don't have to be doing well for this to happen, for me to continue to play. So like if I lose a round, that's not like it for me. Plus I think going back earlier in my earlier career, losing, already seeing myself losing and tilting out of games and then being able to win like that tournament, or like I've lost a lot of like say round ones and then won the tournament, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I noticed that. A couple of stories you mentioned, you mentioned that, and I thought that was really interesting.
I actually, yeah, so I did that for the WMC. So the recent ones, the big ones, were like the WMCQ and my RPTQ. Both of them I lost round one. And that's, and like they're in tournaments where if you lose two rounds, that's it, you're not making top eight. So you now have to win, and you probably can't even ID because you've lost round one. So your breakers are just terrible anyway. So you should never just like give up. Basically what I'm saying, like just because you've lost one round, that doesn't mean anything. You're bound to lose a round during a tournament at any stage. So you just play what the cards are dealt to you, really. And I think a lot of people just, you know, when they're younger, they just get in there, or inexperienced, just get in with their head. And then even though they don't notice, they just, you know, start misplaying or like doing like just subtle mistakes, which just lead to bigger mistakes in the game.
So true. So getting in your own head. So don't let misplays and mistakes from this match, you know, affect the next one. Each match is its own unique entity. You know, you can shake it off, clear it up. It's a new round, a new matchup. Yeah. And so don't get in your own head. I really like that advice for sure. Kind of turning the focus inward on you. What's the deepest thing that you've learned about yourself from playing Magic, Ryan?
I think your morals, your own personal morals. I think playing something, I think anything competitive, it like plays in your morals. Like there's a line between what's right and what's wrong. And I think the biggest thing probably learned from Magic is, you know, I guess when you're like real young, you're like really, really tempted to like, you know, maybe do something that's like cheating or something like that. And I think playing something, anything competitive, you always got that ambition to win at like any cost. It's kind of like driven into you. And then when you actually go into the real world, that's not something you should be doing. And I think Magic, just like as playing it from when I was young, you see that line often crossed by like other people. And I think the older I got, the more I just like don't understand how people can cross that line, because I think I'm morally just like too high. Like I can't understand why someone, you know, I don't know, would like shuffle a deck in a way so, you know, all their, you know, all their best spells are now on top of the library, or they've worked out how to, you know, change life totals, or, you know, I don't really know what they do, like slow play, like all these like things will come up in say Magic, or like, you know, giving away freeze in like sport or anything like that, but getting away with it kind of thing. I think the more you play, the more you find out more about yourself and that what you're going to do. And if you can understand that, I think a big thing for me, the older I've got, is like, I just don't understand why people need to do these things. Like I know being younger, I can see that now, why they be tempted to do it. But I think, yeah, I think it's more just with how I was brought up and stuff. I think Magic has really helped that with me, because like I can see where that line is, and it's just like, why would you ever want to cross that line?
Yeah, it's a perspective thing, like you said. Like now that you're older and wiser, and yeah, you're able to look back and realize that, you know, especially like in the 20s, like you were saying, just so much of your identity is like, oh, like I'm a Magic player and I have to do really good. And it's just like, it's like what you want to identify as, which is totally fine. But you also have to understand, like you said, like there's that line. And so when you're kind of at a later stage in life where you have other things going on, and you realize that Magic is awesome and there's lots of amazing opportunities where you can travel and play and, you know, win if you're well, or win money if you're doing well and stuff like that, it's not like the end all be all. And so you're able to kind of step back, like you said, and enjoy your tournaments better, because you care, obviously, you're competitive, you're there because you want to win and stuff like that, but not so much where it's like, oh, I'm a worthless human being if I don't do well. And likewise, that goes into, like you said, your morals and your values, and like, hey, like, I do want to play, I want to have fun, I want this to be the best experience, not only for me, but for others. And so you stick to your morals. You say, hey, I'm going to shuffle this, you know, fairly, and we're going to play a game, and what happens happens, as opposed to, oh, I have to win, this is part of my identity, and, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes, crossing that line.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's different. Obviously, they all have like different morals and stuff like that. But I think just to me personally, I just can't do anything wrong. Like, I think if I wrote a life title wrong and then somehow won the match and like me, my opponent just like didn't realize. So he like corrected his to mine or like something like that. I don't think I'd be like, that would wake me up in my sleep. That's how far my morals are like. Silly now. So like, I don't know. I think it's just, I find it very interesting with people when they get caught for cheating now, and their cheating is just like insane. It's like, you know, they've got cards like, you know, shoved in places, and then it's like they acquire them somehow during the game, or they play cards which, you know, are meant to come into play tapped, and they come into play untapped, and like, it just boggles me, like, their morals are so obviously different to mine. So, but yeah, I think you learn a lot about yourself, what you're willing to do. Just
especially if you take the time to actually reflect on it, you know, because a lot of people just kind of drift through life and they never take the time to actively kind of reflect on maybe what they've learned or what they've, yeah, what a situation or event has taught them. So prodigies out there, take the time to actively reflect on what Magic has taught you, what you have learned about yourself and what you've learned about people, and you take that opportunity to actively, you know, improve yourself and then, yeah, kind of level up as a person. So, Ryan, if you could go back in time, Ryan, let's say 5 years, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
Self now? Well, 5 years ago, I would have just moved to Melbourne. Would have been like in Melbourne for like 4 months. So kind of had just like kind of stopped playing Magic for a little bit and was like, I actually sold a lot of my cards before moving to Melbourne. And I sold a lot of them to a person I was, you'd say a couple of us were training up as Maitland Cameron.
No way. That's awesome. We've had him on the show before. That's really cool.
Yeah. So he used to come around to my place to play cards when he'd just started in his first few months. And I used to have a card night at my place where basically we just drank alcohol and played some Magic cards and a little bit of Magic online. But it was mostly the drinking and socializing. And yeah, I invited him around. I'd only met him in like a few, it was like basically my last year in Tassie before I moved to Melbourne. So I didn't know him too well, but he seemed like an all right guy, and invited him around, and he managed to, that was the year he qualified for his like first nationals. So he came up and I said to him, I was going to like, because he hadn't had like a cocktail before. And I said, that's it. You know, if you do well, I'm going to get you a cocktail. And that was the year when first Tasmanian top forward.
That's awesome.
Nationals and got to go on the World Magic Cup. So I got him that cocktail.
That's great. That's awesome. He was back on episode 88. For those of you who want to go back and check that out. And here we are. Let's double check here. Ryan, you're going to be episode 154. So how about that? So we have you on episode 154, and Maitland Cameron was back on episode 88. So that's a lot of fun. Well, that's really cool. That's neat. So 5 years ago, you're kind of selling off your cars, just moving. So what advice would you give yourself?
I would say to myself, it's gonna be all good. You're going to... You may have kind of, you know, walked away a little bit from Magic, but you'll come back as you always do. So I came back a few months. I think it was probably about 6 months after that. I just started playing like casually again.
Yeah, once you got settled in.
Yeah, and also just the fact that I'd also tell myself that you're going to have an all right career, you're going to meet someone, you're going to get settled. It's all going to be good, because I think I was like real hectic back then. I was just like going out drinking like all the time with my mates. Well, you know, just moved to a big city, so wanted to see what the city had to offer.
That's good. That's good to have that perspective and go back and say, hey, it's all right. You know, like things will work out and you'll do fine. So as we pull into the home stretch here, Ryan, just a few more things before we wrap up. What magic related resources do you recommend? Do you turn to any place or rather where do you go to get information to stay up to date?
Yeah. So I go on Star City Games. I have a premium account on that. So I read the articles on that. I go on Channel 502. I read all the articles on that. They're the two main ones, which I've kind of always looked at. Star City has been one I've always looked at. And then I actually go on Gatherer a lot, which is just the card database, because I like to brew decks. So I've been brewing decks for years and years, so I always go on Gatherer to see what cards are in current standard or whatever I'm trying to build. So even when I first started, I always used to like make my own decks. Occasionally I, you know, switch to like a net deck, change a couple of cards and then play it in a tournament. But I qualified for World Magic Cup with one of my own creations based off, you know, an idea I got off, I think Star City initially, the Restore Balance. And like completely changed it because I just removed out all the border posts and everything and made it into my own kind of deck. And another one I built was Gritza's Dragons in Standard. That was the one that got me onto the Pro Tour for the RPTQ. So that was when everyone was playing Bank Company and Rally the Ancestor decks. And I was like, nah, need to play with Chase. Need to play with Thunderbreak Dragon, Culligan. And Culligan's Command. I'm like, these are all the cards I like. I'm playing with those. And yeah, so that did well for me. And then we moved forward to the World Magic Cup. The blue-red deck, I actually was working on a version of that based off the results I saw on Magic Online. And I actually initially had Storm Chaser Mage instead of Thing of Ice. All the way up until about 2 weeks before or 3 weeks before the World Magic Cup. And I was like, well, because Thing of Ice was in my sideboard, and I was like, I'm going to start testing it in the main deck because it seems to be putting up a lot of results. There's a lot of people with playing in the main deck. And basically, once I moved it to the main deck, I never looked back.
Oh, good stuff. Absolutely love it. Now, do you have any daily rituals, any non-negotiables that you do no matter what? And they don't have to be magic-related, but just something that you feel sets you up for your day or for success in general?
I have a shower every morning. That's how I start my day. That's how I wake up. I get in a have a nice warm shower every morning of every day. I know some people don't shower every single day. Like, no need, I guess, for some people. But yeah, that's definitely something I have to do every day. So if I don't get my shower, I feel like I'm unclean and the irritation will just drive me through the day.
There you go. So start off the day nice and fresh, nice and clean. Getting that, love it. Absolutely love it. So what advice would you give to players who are, you know, up and coming competitive? You know, they're going to Friday Night Magics, they're going to Grand Prix, not necessarily making day two, but they're almost there. What advice would you give to this level of player?
I would say keep at it. Don't get, if you're not winning as much as what you think, or like, you know, you're not having fun. I think the biggest thing is have fun. If you're not having fun, then maybe like take a step backwards. My main thing is the reason why I keep playing and so much is because I love playing it. So if I was not having fun playing the game, I would not be playing it. That is like my biggest thing. So just always enjoy what you're doing. And then if you want to, you know, step up, just, you know, put more time into it. And not take it, you know, too serious. I mean, that does sound a bit, if I'm putting more time in it, then obviously I'm taking it more serious. But I think just overall, just your just general aspect of the game itself shouldn't be too serious because, you know, it's a game. If you do well, you do well. And if you don't, well, it's still a game. And if you're having fun, well, that's all that matters.
Prodigies out there, once again, if you want to connect with Ryan, you can do so on Twitter. He's at EgyptianCubit, but he's not there super active on Twitter, so Facebook's the best way. We're going to try and rope him into the ProTutor Prodigy group, so that might be the easiest way to find him is join the Prodigy group and
Yeah, send him a message. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him a question. He obviously knows a lot. He's experienced magic in lots of different, you know, aspects in paper and online and different formats. So pick his brain a little bit. So Ryan, finally, what is one last parting piece of guidance? Either something you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I'm going to go with just be yourself. I mean, game was created years ago. It was just created, you know, if someone wanted to play strategic card game, you know, test your brain. And I think if you like that aspect and, you know, like hanging out with your mates, playing something what you love, just keep doing it.
Ryan, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, Sean. It's been a pleasure.
There you have it, Mr. Ryan Cubitt himself. So fun having him on the show. Absolutely love talking about magic. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Ryan Cubitt, and you'll find a synopsis of what we talked about as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. I want to say congratulations again to Matt Severa, who is a past guest of the show and took down Grand Prix Denver over the weekend. I think we have one more Grand Prix this year, and then there's a little bit of a break for the holidays and whatnot, and we'll pick back up again in January, which will then put Aether Revolt right on the horizon. I'm super excited for the new set. The previews are starting to come out now. We've already seen and had some discussion on our Facebook group, which I encourage you to join because it is a positive, uplifting, fun community where you can ask any question, post your deck list, talk about your tournament results, get tips and tricks. You can also interact with guests. We're getting more and more guests joining the group there. So you can look for them there, ask them a question, ping them, and they're just great people who love giving back to the Magic community, and the Facebook group is a perfect forum for that. I will be announcing the winner of the Patreon-exclusive giveaway either next episode or the one after that, so stay tuned for that, and go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon if you're interested in being considered for all future giveaways. Thank you again for joining me today. I love doing this show. This is an awesome, fun time of year. I'm honored that you have decided to have me keep you company for this brief time, and I look forward to doing it again real soon. As always, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.